And tonight our speaker is Cindy A. from Tucson, Arizona.
My name is Cindy. I'm an addict and an alcoholic. It's wonderful to be in Monterey. One of the fringe benefits of sobriety is getting invited to talk in Monterey, and another one is getting invited to come back and talk again. If Jim B. ever asks you to come and share at an AA conference, do it. I was met at the airport by a gorgeous man with a blue Cadillac who swooped me off to a wonderful room on the beach, and sobriety is a joyous thing. That's kind of the way I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm doing what Woody Allen suggests. Woody Allen says showing up is 80% of life. And that's exactly what I'm doing. I sincerely believe today that as long as I just show up, I'm doing the very best I can one day at a time. I tried for so many years to figure out how to do it right and how not to do it wrong. And I have discovered in sobriety that there is just doing it one day at a time, clean and sober, and with as much laughter and joy as possible. It says in the book that we are sure God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. I'm absolutely positive of that. That's what sobriety has been for me. It has also been the greatest pain I've ever known, the greatest unhappiness, the greatest loss and tragedy. I heard things in a strange way when I came to you. When you said to me, if you stick around, you'll feel better, I thought you meant I'd never feel bad. I didn't know that you meant I would feel everything better. I'd feel better pain, better joy, better laughter, better sexual response, better everything. I had no idea what you had in store for me. If you're new tonight, if you're in your first 30 days or your first year or your first 5 years, now that I have seven, I can say that. If you're new tonight, let me say very simply, hold on to your ass. You're going for a hell of a ride. Sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous is a remarkable experience. I have come to understand life as a totally humbling experience. If you do not feel humble, hang around. You'll get that way. Sobriety has buckled my knees. Through the steps of this program, I have lost control. I have lost my mind. When people I work with say, my God, I'm hurting so bad. I've worked the steps. I must not be working them right. What am I doing wrong? It is important for me to share with them that, in my opinion, if you're hurting, it's because you're working the steps. The steps have brought about remarkable change within me. And it doesn't seem to occur without pain. I don't know if that's because I resist it and fight it. I don't know why, but I still experience change with pain. I'm a little more used to it now, and I'm more used to the reality that I'll get through it, that it will pass, that everything that comes into my life has come to pass. It took me a long time to hear that in the way I hear it today. I spent a lot of my time looking for escape, freedom, and God in alcohol and narcotics. I agree absolutely with Father Terry when he says that a couple of martinis is the closest thing to a spiritual experience that isn't. That's the way it was for me. And when I first mainlined morphine, I knew I had found God. There was no doubt in my mind. And I pursued God as I understood him. In morphine for a long time. It sure felt like God to me because I got very peaceful and very quiet and very calm. The only problem is that morphine ran out on me. it did a nasty thing that professionally we call metabolize. Morphine metabolizes. That means it quits working. And the difference for me today in Alcoholics Anonymous is that so far, after 7.5 years, the steps have not stopped working. They don't seem to metabolize. They become a part of my life, my way of thinking, my way of being. My friend Chuck says there's absolutely nothing for us to do except to be. Do you know what that means? That means there is nothing for me to do except to be. And that is a remarkable order. Most of the time, I can't go through with it. I want to do something. You know, I want to do something so I'll be better. I want to get the next degree, the better job, the next promotion, the handsomer man, more money, a better car. God, there's got to be something for me to do. I was a student in college for 18 years of my life. Now, that's not to my credit. You know, a lot of people say, that's wonderful. Believe me when I tell you, there's absolutely nothing else I could do. I just do that well, you know. If you'll give me a book and tell me to read it and a little bit about how to think about it, I'll be eternally grateful. I will just love you for giving me guidance and direction. I don't want to have to look within me. My friend Chuck says that what I'm looking for is what I'm looking with. I experienced this summer the full realization of that truth, that what I'm looking for is what I'm looking with. It isn't out there anywhere. It's up here, standing in my shoes, right here, right now. I am what I am going to be. And you've helped me become that. Boy, you could have fooled me. I was the last person I ever wanted to be when I came to you. I was absolutely sure there wasn't enough left for you to do anything with. That you'd gotten to me about 20 minutes too late. That there was no way I could ever learn to care again. That's what I feared most, I think, when I sat down next to a stranger in a restaurant and he brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was pretty sure I'd never care. I knew that you cared. I could tell by the way you talked to me and the way you looked at me, the way you put your arms around me. And I was absolutely terrified that I'd never give a flying damn again as long as I lived. I thought I had drowned my ability to care for you or anything because I had worked so hard not to care. I experienced caring for a portion of my life as great risk, great vulnerability. If I cared about you, I gave you the power to hurt me. I understand today that there isn't any way that anyone or anything outside of me can hurt me. I have within me all of the strength, all of the courage, and all of the resources that I need to face my life one day at a time. Let me tell you a little bit about some of the experiences I've had that have proven that to me. I have very little idea what's going to happen up here when I get up here. It isn't up to me. It's up to you somehow. You've given me all that I have, and somehow you bring it out of me when I stand up here. I'm literally out of control. This is none of my business. I don't know why I do it. I don't know how I do it. A stranger calls me up that I don't know, who lives in a place I've probably never been, tells me to get on an airplane and fly into an airport, and somehow we always connect. And somehow I always get where I'm going. And it's always an absolutely remarkable experience of sheer faith. Because I'm too cool to live like that. I gotta have it all figured out. I've got to have a goal, right? I gotta know where I'm going, how I'm gonna get there, how long it's gonna take, and if it's worth a fucking effort. Oh. And I wore myself clear out living that way. Clear out. I mean, there was just nothing left. There was just this little tiny 80-pound person. 40 pounds of that was liver and dirt. That's all that was left of me when I came to you. And you just loved the hell out of me. It made absolutely no sense. There was nothing of me to love. Nothing. And you just loved me. Every which way you could. I love to be introduced at conferences so I can figure out who I am. Not that long ago, I was introduced as the God Bless the 13th Step Girl. I am eternally, totally grateful for the 13th Step. That's why I'm here. Because, as I understand God today, He doesn't put any conditions on love. We do that. And we talk about how it should be expressed. And He refuses us. You know, I work hard with the 11th step, and I pray a lot for the knowledge of God's will for me and the courage to carry that out. And then I have to know that every day and every way I have the knowledge of God's will for me. I prayed for a long time for the knowledge of God's will and wondered where in the hell it was. When is He going to tell me? When is He going to guide me? Why doesn't He answer me? He has. I just fail to see the answer. Because I'm always looking at the problem. I'm always wondering where in the hell He's going to get around to me. Where has He gone? I understand today that I don't pray to change God's mind. I pray to change me. God, as I understand Him, is. It says in the book, He either is or He isn't. If He is, it's all okay. If He isn't, it doesn't make any difference anyway. I choose to believe that He is because it just feels better. It just makes me happier and more joyous. Now, if He is, it is all okay. I am always the perfect person for the situation I find myself in. A beautiful lady up at Fallen Leaf Lake added remarkably to that line when she pointed out that she too had come to believe she was always the perfect person for the situation she found herself in. And standing up at this podium tonight, I'm sure of it. I'm the perfect person to be here. Now the challenge comes to know that I am the perfect person for the situation I find myself in when I'm 13 stepping a newcomer who can't get it up. Right? Am I still the perfect person? You betcha. He either is or He isn't, hey? And if He is, it's all okay. Right? The reason I understand it that way is because there wasn't very much left of me that worked when I got to you. And God, as I understand Him, knew what was left that worked. That's why He knew exactly how to get my attention. And He got my attention through a tall, handsome man who put his arms around me and said, "Let us love you until you can love yourself." And that's exactly what He did. He took me to bed and He took me to a meeting. That's why I'm here. I felt guilty about that for a long time. He felt so guilty he almost got drunk. Do you understand how much ego that is? That's crazy. To pray for God to use me and then say, "But not that way." That's nuts. That's my insanity. That's me trying to figure out God's will instead of allowing God's will to be my life. My life is God's will. My will and God's will are not different. If my will gets me into a storm, He loves me through it. He doesn't care how I get to Him. He just knows I'm on my way. And every minute of every day that I live, I'm just on my way to God. It simplified my life a lot. If you're new tonight, you may not even be able to hear that. I certainly couldn't. You know, if there was a God, I was in trouble. So there probably wasn't. I have come to understand that since there was a God, I was in trouble, and you were here to help me through it. That's God as I understand Him. He knows what I need, and He provides every experience. I walk right into it. I slipped a lot my first year of sobriety. I hear people say, "I don't want you to do it that way. That's not the way to do it." I would like to say for you, to you that it is the way to do it, if that's the way you do it. It was the way for me to do it. It was essential for me to drink again after I came to you. It was essential for me to drink again until I found out that what I'm looking for is not an alcohol. And I had to find that out. I had to see what I was looking for in your eyes and realize it was not an alcohol. It was not in narcotics. It's in you. My search in alcohol and narcotics was a very spiritual search. I was looking for God. I just got stuck on the vehicle and forgot what I was looking for. I have found what I was searching for in you, because that's what you are. My friend Duffy says I was looking for God everywhere. And that's where He is. Everywhere. In everything. There aren't any mistakes, as far as I'm concerned. I can hear your heads going now about all the mistakes you've made. I married the wrong men, drank the wrong booze, drove the wrong cars, and always took the wrong job. How can that be true? I'm here tonight, doing what I'm doing, There are no mistakes. There's no way to do it right or wrong. There's just doing it. If I make a mistake, it helps me understand what I'm comfortable with and what I'm comfortable without. After I'd been around for a few months for the third or fourth time, I went to a conference in upstate New York and I met a man named Tom and I fell in love. Tommy and I embarked on a remarkable journey together. We traveled all over the country and we ended up in Laguna Beach, California, where I had what was to be my last slip. I wish I could tell you why it was my last slip. I wish I could tell you that something changed. I don't know. I did not know it was the last time I would use drugs. It just turned out to be the last time. And I didn't know that until some years later. That's why I know today that I never give up on anybody I'm working with. No matter how hopeless it seems, no matter how difficult, I never know when the magic will happen. I never know when their time has come, any more than I knew when my time had come. It just came. And that part of me that is God within me said, honey, you've had enough. That's it. It isn't there. Let me show you where it is. And I found it in Tommy for a while. We had a wonderful journey. We laughed and played in Laguna Beach. We lived the AA way of life. We worked with lots of newcomers. We were very good for each other and to each other. While we were together, Tommy wrote 4 books, all of which were published. I completed my PhD in psychology. We did a lot for each other. Tom saw in me what I had lost. He saw the magic in me. He saw the strength and courage in me. He saw the ability to care and to love that I had lost. And he just kept looking at it until I could find it and feel it and begin to experience it. Our time together was magnificent. The day came when our time together ended. Tommy fell in love with another woman, a very young woman. And Tom Alibrandi was absolutely, totally faithful to the one person he could be faithful to. He was faithful to himself. He came to me with rigorous honesty, and he said, Cindy, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. I'm leaving. I've never known greater pain. I've never known greater loss, greater grief, greater agony. Like June said, I cried for days. I absolutely fell apart. All of my babies came back into my life to remind me what shit I'd said to them. That's the only reason I, that's the only reason I have babies today. So they remind me of the stupid things I say. God. And they remind me of the damnedest times when I just am falling apart. And they say, don't you remember? And I'm always the schmuck that said it, you know. That's what my babies do for me. And that's what they did for me that remarkable summer of 1977. They came to me and they loved me. And my sponsors and my babies and my dear, wonderful friends in Laguna Beach gathered around me and they said, we cannot take away your pain. We would not take away your pain if we could. It is yours to grow with. Let the pain grow you. Grow right where you are. What we will do is love you while you hurt. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what we do for each other. We don't take away the pain. We share it. Because life is pain and joy. And it's easy to work the program when it's joyous. And it's a real challenge when it hurts. My greatest challenge came that summer of 1977. And as I look back on it today, I understand that Tommy did the greatest favor for me the day he left. Because on that day, and on the days and months and years since that time, Tom helped me discover what you have given me. The real strength, the real courage, and the real hope that is Alcoholics Anonymous. Because if I could stay sober through that, I don't need to drink anymore. I don't need to run away and hide in drugs and alcohol. I can take my life as it comes, one day at a time. And I didn't believe that was possible. In my heart, deep in my heart, I am a coward. As Bobby says, all the heroes are still out there drinking. Cowards are in here in Alcoholics Anonymous. Say, I give up. I've had it. That's it. I give whatever it is. I surrender to it. Just give it. I just give up. And since that first surrender, I have surrendered many times in Alcoholics Anonymous. This past summer, I had yet another surrender. A year ago last March, I had a remarkable surrender. My son has provided surrender, my father. The men in my life, as a matter of fact, have provided the most remarkable challenges. Oh. You know, every once in a while I get up after another round and I think, man, that's it. Those rotten sons of bitches. It's that wonderful tragedy. I can't live with them and I can't live without them, you know. They are a magnificent part of my life. A part of my sober experience in Laguna Beach was with a beautiful man named Bob and his wife at that time, a woman named Taylor. And Tom and I lived with Bob and Taylor for a while, and Taylor was dying of cancer. And when Taylor and I first met, we talked for a little while, and she was a magnificent woman. And she looked at me and she said, "Honey, I know what you need. You need to go to the Monday night Woman's Stag in Laguna Beach." And I said, "Taylor, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women. I'm very grateful for that. I have very little in common with women, and I have no intention of going to a woman's meeting." Right? She laughed. She said, "I understand, and we will go to the Woman's Stag in Laguna Beach." In April of that year, Bob took Taylor to a hospital in San Diego, and he called from the hospital, and he said, "Taylor is dying. She will not live through the night." And I said, "Bob, I'll wait here by the phone to hear from you." He said, "No, Cindy, you go to that Woman's Stag. I had just had my slip a couple of weeks before." And he said, "You go to that woman's meeting for yourself. You go for Taylor, and you go for me." I went to that meeting, and during that meeting, Taylor passed away. I sincerely believe that she passed on to me her sobriety. It has not been necessary for me to drink or use drugs since that time. Taylor is in my heart and my mind with me all the time. There is no ending without a new beginning. The ending of Taylor's life was the beginning of mine. I had another experience with that a year ago when my 30-year-old brother took his life. As Bob said when he called, "Cindy, honey, I understand your brother shut out the voices." Yes, my brother shut out the voices. I know what that's like. I know what it feels like to want to just shut out the voices. I often wish that my brother could have tried shutting out the voices with drugs and alcohol for a while. It's not quite as irrevocable as blowing your brains out with a gun. But he did what he had to do. And you see, I know tonight, standing here, that I prayed every day for the knowledge of God's will for my brother. And that's exactly what I got. The knowledge of God's will for my brother. My brother had had enough. As a direct result of my brother's death, I went to Florida to be with my mother and father, and I called Alcoholics Anonymous because my father is a drunk, and he was very drunk through that experience, and I couldn't help him because I just wanted to slap him. So I called AA, and they said, "A magnificent man. If I had placed the order, I would not have done as good a job as God did. As some of you have heard me say, the man who called on my dad was perfect because he drove up in my father's driveway driving a bigger car than my father drives, with a sticker from a more expensive neighborhood than my father lives in. He had a better suntan. He was much trimmer, about the same age, not nearly so heavy and bloated. And he swooped into my father's house and he did exactly for my father what you have done for me. He put his arms around my dad and said, 'Just let us love you. Through this pain, through this loss, and through this grief.' The ending of my brother's life on this earth was the beginning of a new life for my father. There is no ending, as far as I can tell, without a new beginning. The ending of my relationship with Tommy was the beginning of a new life for me. I went very suddenly from being a happily married student living on the beach in Southern California to being a single professor living in the desert in Tucson, Arizona. And I have no idea what happened. I had nothing to do with any of it. As I look back on it, it seems to me that my life is none of my business. Showing up is 80% of life. That's all I do. I just show up. I just give it my very best shot every day. If I could do any better, I would. And when I can, I will. That has brought about remarkable changes in my life. My father, by the way, celebrated his first year of sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous last March. He now goes to a meeting every night. He answers the phones at central office. He loves AA just as much as I always knew he would, just as much as I always felt that he would. He is providing me some more opportunities to grow because, especially in the last 2 years, I've had some really interesting experiences with sobriety, with individual interpretations of the book Alcoholics Anonymous. To put that in a little briefer form, with some of the bullshit we lay on each other, I've really gotten in touch with it, and one of the classic, most perfect examples for me that I can talk about for hours, if you're interested, is the phrase that we sometimes lay on each other, do not get emotionally involved. Can you imagine saying that to somebody? I can't, you know, I just can't, in my heart, I know it's wrong. To say to somebody who comes in to Alcoholics Anonymous, somebody who's gotten so unemotionally, uninvolved for so long that they can't grab their ass with both hands, they are so cool they have become an iceberg somewhere along the way, and we look at them and say, now don't get emotionally involved, don't make any major decisions in the first year, and they're saying, huh? Alcoholics Anonymous is emotional involvement. It is love as I understand it. It is God as I understand it. What do you mean, don't get emotionally involved? I don't understand that. That's what this program is. I am, right now, emotionally involved. I love you. I love you in a way I thought I could never love again. We are in love together. There is so much love in this room that we don't need to go anywhere else. This room is love. We are in love. In God's love, in the love of AA. What do you mean, don't get emotionally involved? How can we do that to each other? I guess we do it to each other for the same reason that I have spent the last 3 years trying not to be afraid. That's why we do it. That's why I do it. That's why once in a while, if I'm not very careful, I give my babies advice instead of sharing my experience. You see, the minute I give you advice, I'm stepping into a world of trouble. My advice can be right or wrong. My experience can never be right or wrong. My experience just is. That's why AA works, because we share our experience, strength, and hope. We do not give advice. We do not say, do not get emotionally involved. That's advice, that's bullshit. Right? You don't have to talk. But we do say it. I say it. Because I'm afraid. And because when Tommy left me in 1977, I pulled in my horns, I closed my doors, I shut down, I said, okay, by God, nobody's going to get me again. Right? That hurt too much. I cannot risk, I cannot open, I cannot share in that way again. I'll just be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous sharing my experience, strength, and hope, and I'll die an old maid. Oh. Every once in a while, I think anybody could be better by now. It's absolutely amazing. And then I realize that maybe, on the other hand, it's a good thing I'm going so slow because I might be going in the wrong direction. However, if I am, I have never had so much fun in my life. I have never experienced so much love, so much joy. But for a while, after that experience, I was afraid. And I said to people for a while, be careful. Don't take a risk. Hedge your bets. Second guess it. Easy does it. Slow down. It might hurt. So what? I learned by saying it, but I can't live it. I cannot live that way. Part of alcohol and drugs for me was being so damn careful. Because when I'm full of dope, I'm cool, and nobody can hurt me. And when I have a painful experience in Alcoholics Anonymous, when I lose a husband that I love very much, when I lose a brother that I love very much, my tendency is to shut down and say, my God, you're not going to hurt me again. Of course he's not going to hurt me again. That's part of my growth, part of my experience, part of my journey into love. And it seems to me that I have one of two options. I can take a chance and love, knowing that in love there is remarkable joy and remarkable pain, or I can be careful and not love too much and not care too much and not get much out of sobriety. I know a lot of people who live sobriety that way. I honor their right to it. I understand why they do it that way. I'm just not able to. Because the longer I stay sober and the more I go through the process provided by the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, the more open I become, the more vulnerable I am, the more I have to risk it all every day. The more I have to open up and say, okay, honey, come get me. You ain't getting no virgin. And yet you are. It seems to me that most of the experiences I now have in sobriety, I've never had before. I seem to be a recycled virgin. That's what you've done for me. So that everything I do is new. Everything I say is new. Everything I experience is quite remarkable. It's known within this fellowship as a spiritual awakening. And I used to think a spiritual awakening was something like a bolt of lightning with the instructions on it. And then I got one, and I don't ever want another one. I will take my spiritual experiences as they come, and they come in a variety of ways, all the way from a bolt of lightning to a remarkable sexual response. That is a spiritual experience. And if you're new, and if you haven't had one yet, just wait. If you've been doing it with dope for a long time, just wait. You are in for a real treat. Because you see, God loves us enough to give us that joy, to give us these bodies that feel the way they feel, that can love in all the ways we can love, and that can provide the experiences that I now stay sober for, with, to, because of. It is the most remarkable life. It far exceeds anything I could ever imagine. I promise you that if you stick around, you will see the light at the end of the tunnel. I cannot promise you that it will not be a locomotive. It might be a locomotive. And when it's done with you, I will be there. Just like you were there for me after my locomotives. And you picked me up and you plumped me back up and got the tracks off my chest. I said, it's okay, babe. Cry, scream, beg, plead. It's okay. When I was going in and out of funny farms, mental institutions that were my insanity is just another form of escape, as I understand it. It's another place to hide. Schizophrenia is an experience of God, a full experience of God. It's just frightening because it comes in weird ways. And when I was in those mental institutions, they used to say to me, honey, we know you're going to have an emotional crisis, but we don't want you to have it here. It's very messy, and it upsets the people on the ward. So take this Thorazine and this Valium and be very quiet. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and you said to me, we know you're going to have an emotional crisis, and you may have it in my living room, in the front seat of my car, any time, day or night, just call me. We'll have it together. And I've had them. I've had so many. I no longer have to hedge my bets with drugs, with fear, with doubt, with the feeling that somebody can do something to me or for me. I had what seemed to me a remarkably tragic realization this summer, and I scurried to Laguna Beach to talk with my friend Chuck, because he has pulled me through so many times like that, and I said, my God, Chuck, it has suddenly really dawned on me that absolutely nobody, absolutely nothing can do it for me. That was the most tragic, total, full realization I've ever had. And it has also been my most triumphant realization. It is, as I understand it today, the lonely reality of God. It has given me more freedom, more opportunity to be whatever I turn out to be, because I no longer have to rely on anyone outside of me to fix me. What Chuck always told me has turned out to be true. What I'm looking for is what I'm looking with. I have right here with me all that I need, because I have with me a power that can do it all. And I just go along for the ride. I just go along to see what's going to happen next. I can't imagine. You know, I took off from Laguna Beach to go to the desert to this wonderful job. After completing my PhD, I was offered a job at the University of Arizona as an assistant professor. And after having been there about 3 years, they came to me and said, "We've decided that we're going to put your program on temporary suspension and probably eliminate it. And you have 2 years to graduate your students." I had worked hard for 3 years, hoping that they would make a different decision and that they would keep our program there. Because the job that I have today makes a lot of sense out of a life that didn't seem to make any sense for a long time. Because what I do today is teach people how to work with people like me. I teach a 2-year graduate program called Addiction Studies, and we train people how to administer, manage, and counsel in drug and alcohol treatment. And believe me, if you have a counselor who tells you not to get emotionally involved, he wasn't in my class. Anyway, I don't know who said that. Who said that? When the graduate college came to me and said, "It looks like we're going to eliminate your program," I had another opportunity to grow in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and to say, "Okay, Father, I have prayed for the knowledge of your will for me. I now accept it. I've got it. Okay. I'll do the best I can to reorient, replan, reorganize." Last week they called the graduate college and said, "Well, we've reconsidered our decision, and it is not a final decision yet, but we may keep addiction studies at the university." Guess what? I don't care. All of a sudden, somehow, in the last year, since they first decided to eliminate it, and now they've decided maybe they'll keep it, I'm just as happy if they cut it loose as if they keep it. I really have a feeling that I'm going to go raise quarter horses anyway. Go with it. I don't know. It's remarkable. I spent 18 years in the university working for the kind of job that I have today. That is a long-held goal, right? That is a goal that I worked many years of my life for. And one part of my head says, "My God, you cannot give up a goal that you've worked 20 years for." Guess what? The goal isn't what I worked for. What I worked for was 20 years. I loved every minute of it. It was the most beautiful experience. Because what happened in that 20 years came together, 15 years of addiction and 18 years of education, in a beautiful experience. It has nothing to do with the goal. It has to do with the trip, the journey, one day at a time. Every day has become more precious because slowly but surely, like pulling teeth, I am learning to be right here, right now. At this moment, I don't want to be anywhere else in the universe. And more of my life is that way today than it's ever been before. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't times when I would rather be anywhere than where I'm at. It just means that more often, I'm right where I want to be, doing what I want to do with whomever I want to be with. Like many of my friends in Alcoholics Anonymous, after Tommy left, I was sure, I was absolutely positive, I was totally convinced that I would never love again, right? I had blown my last opportunity. I had, somehow, with not knowing how, I had failed. And I was never going to love again. I don't know what it's going to take to get through to that part of me that I call my ego. Now, I also had a remarkable experience with my ego not very long ago. I have worked and worked and worked for 7.5 years of sobriety on my ego. I have a big ego. I need a U-Haul to carry it around with. And it's a very subtle ego. As my sponsor is fond of pointing out, it's the kind that, I don't need to go into that. That's a whole other story. What I was going to tell you about, those of you who understand know how I've got a subtle ego. But I worked and worked and worked on my ego, and suddenly, all of a sudden this summer, I realized there's absolutely nothing there. My ego convinced me that it was there. There's nothing to it. When you experience that, it will be like somebody slapped you in the face. It was for me, because, honey, there's nothing there. It's all God. And you just think you got an ego. He's got you. He really has you. He really has me. He really has us doing exactly what he wants us to do. We're the only ones who question it. We're the only ones who say, how am I going to do God's will? Honey, you're doing it. Just keep doing it. Just keep reporting for duty every day. Quit trying to figure out what you're doing and why you're doing. Just do it. You are doing God's will, and we're all screwed. Right? And another part of that is that we have always done God's will. If I wasn't doing God's will when I was drinking, I'm not doing it now. When I was sticking needles in my veins and pills in my throat and suppositories in my ear, I was doing God's will. God, as I understand him, knows what I need to get to God, period. And he provides every bit of it. Pain, joy, laughter, anguish. He knows what I need to get there. He allows me to use every bit of my resources, to use them all up, so that I very soon, sooner, better, run out of my own resources, surrender clear down to my toes, and come home to God. Come home to Alcoholics Anonymous and say, hey, I give up. And then I find it. When I had lost it all, I had just begun. When the end was at hand, I was just beginning. If I can survive drug addiction and alcoholism, I can survive anything. If I can survive in sobriety what I have survived, clear and sober, alcohol wasn't doing anything for me anyway. I just thought so. I had this great illusion, right, that some drug, some man, or some job is going to fix me. I'm already fixed. It's just hard for me to accept that. It's hard for me to stand here and say to you, I'm fixed. I'm okay. I am, as a matter of fact, a perfect expression of God as I understand him, because he doesn't make any fucking mistakes. And if he does, we're all a mistake. And if he doesn't, there aren't any. It seems so simple. But I keep forgetting. I keep thinking, oh no, I've made another mistake. And it felt that way this summer because in May I fell in love again. Now, I don't know about you, but when I'm in love, I know it. And when I'm not, I know it. And sometimes when I'm not in love, I try to convince myself I am. And sometimes when I am in love, I try to say, no, no, this isn't it. This can't be it. Especially this time. Because he happens to be married, he happens to have a couple of kids, and the one promise I've kept to myself in 7 years of sobriety is I do not fool around with married men. Now, I understand today that when I make myself a promise like that, when I say I will never do that, I create the necessity to do it. Every time. Grady. Grady said it beautifully of a fallen leaf lake when she said, what I have learned about judgment is not to do it. Because when I say, how can she? God says, ah, we'll see. I'm going to show you. This is how she did it. And off I go. Off I go. You see, I try hard not to judge. Not to save you from my judgment, but to save me from it. It wears me out. It absolutely reduces me to a blithering idiot, because every time I judge your actions, I end up having to do it. Every single time. The same is true with resentment and anger for me. I don't try to work on my anger and resentment to keep you from experiencing the horrors of my resentment and anger. It's to save me from it. When I have a resentment, I allow somebody to use my head rent-free. I don't like to do that anymore. I like to use my head, and I don't want you using it. And when I use it correctly, my friend Bob talks about thinking and what a remarkable challenge it provides for us, and how my mind is a great servant and a horrible master. And a friend of mine was contemplating that sign in AA halls that says, think, think, think. And he said, I can't imagine how anybody could put a sign like that up. They must have been a slipper. He said, what can that mean? What can that sign mean, think, think, think? And he finally said, it finally suddenly dawned on me. It says, think, think, think. It doesn't say, mind fuck, mind fuck, mind fuck. Right? My mind is a wonderful servant. It has helped me through all of the experiences I have had in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it will help me survive the ones that are to come. Because now I'm in love with this wonderful, remarkable, insane man. I have never yet fallen in love with a sane man. I've tried to. God knows I've tried. I tried for years to find a keeper. Somebody who would take care of me, a caretaker. Just give me a caretaker, a few bars, have him portion out the credit cards and cut them in half once in a while and slap me and say, straighten up, and I'll be damned. They just bore me to tears. So I have come up with yet another totally insane, wonderful, bizarre, crazy man. My life is a Chinese fire drill. It is endlessly exciting. I cannot wait to find out what's going to happen next. I can tell you what's going to happen next. I'm going to fly at 7 o'clock in the morning to Los Angeles to see him. I mean, why not? What have I got to lose? What are you going to do to me? Send me to Vietnam? I have absolutely nothing to lose. You have given me that gift. Because in losing all of it, I found you. And it's the greatest gift I've ever had. It was absolutely essential for me to lose it all to come to you. It was absolutely essential for me to lose it all in sobriety to find that there is not any way I can lose. I dislike intensely the idea that we have winners and losers in Alcoholics Anonymous. Have you ever noticed that when a person defines a loser, they do so in a way that does not include them? Hang out with the winners. They look like me. If this is a competition, I'm screwed. There are people who come to Alcoholics Anonymous, period. We all come here looking for exactly what we find here. Exactly. And we get it. Some of us get sober, some of us don't. We get what we come here for. Always. There are no mistakes. There is no way to do it, right or wrong. You have what you came here for. I have what I came here for. Thank you for letting me share it.